Coming up, you asked us questions, and we are going to do our best to give you information about those questions you asked. From the Bob Varley studio in Orlando, Florida, this is the Universal Edition of the Diz Unplugged. This is episode 178 of the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition. The Diz Unplugged Universal Edition is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect universal vacation. Visit them on the web at www.dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition, soon to be renamed. I am your host, Craig Williams. I say soon to be renamed. I explained it, I believe, on last week's episode because we are going through a sort of rebranding with the Diz Unplugged brand. We're dropping this as an edition show, but we've been so busy with that rebranding that we forgot to also rebrand this at the same time. So we're still rocking it in the free world right now, just as we are and should be. I don't know if I said who I am. I'm Craig Williams.
You
if
did. I already twice, said you that. Have not introduced me yet.
If I already said that, I am Craig Williams. And if I haven't, I am Craig Williams. And I am also joined alongside by my co-host, Rhino Clavin.
Oh, well, hello there. Hi. And our new co-host, yeah. Rocket.
Yeah, he's our
back there. He's giving me the creep eyes.
Yeah, like, I know. I know that I'm wearing the headphones, but he's actually our new audio engineer. So yeah. This is obviously a gag that only works for visuals. So if you're listening to this, I'm sorry.
So I do have a question about our show right now. Are we technically that prince that was in the middle where he just had the symbol?
Yes.
We're like the artist formerly known as the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition.
Yes, but we haven't accepted a new name on top of it too. So we're right in between there.
Yeah.
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 It's fun times to be in this place. So
I regret getting that tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah. For all those people out there who bought all that merch that said Universal Edition, I am so sorry. It's now what we would call in the biz a collector's item because it will not be around forever. And I know I'm saying this right now, and now it's going to be around for like another 6 months down the road until we finally do something about it. But none of that's important. What is important today is getting to our show, which I said is a question and answer episode. So we put the call out weeks ago for questions, and you know, life got in the way, of course. So we put this one on the back burner until this week, that is. So yeah, we have our question and answer episode. We got a couple questions for you here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-ish, with some having multiple questions in there. So, you know, it's just a good round. There are ones that we haven't used, so we will save them in the event that we're using them in the future and they can be used. And, of course, we'll put a call out for more in the future when we're ready to do another one of these. But just letting you know, if your question wasn't answered on this one, it's not necessarily never going to get answered, just not this one right away. But we will get to that. Before we do jump into it, I do want to point out one correction from last week's episode about Halloween Horror Nights. So
Sorry, you reminded me of something about Halloween Horror Nights I wanted to check before.
Oh, no, that is perfectly fine. So, yeah, last week we were, of course, talking about all the new announcements with Halloween Horror Nights that came out, including the three scare zones and Academy of Villains. And with that, we were instantly talking about Academy of Villains just going back into its old place with utilizing the stage that they built for Rock the Universe and doing that system of just having it there in public. And I thought that's what they would genuinely do, because to me, that makes the most sense. It's the Academy of Villains is a high energy show that features dancing that's most impressive when you're right up close and in the action.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of the comments came through, and then saw other sites talking about it on Twitter as well, that with the decision to move to 10 houses, that meant Academy of Villains for some reason had to be placed inside of Fear Factor Live, since that would be the only show and there wouldn't be another one. And so then I got official confirmation by by my person who knows everything on it. I mean, it was officially confirmed by other sources too, and then I finally got it from my end, knowing that it is actually going to happen, that Academy of Villains is going to take place in Fear Factor. But I apologize for saying that it was most likely going to be back out on the stage, because to me, that made the most sense. And I did hear the rumors that were surrounding that, okay, well, if there wasn't, you know, if there was only going to be one show, then they might choose to move it in there. But I have not understood the idea behind putting Academy of Villains inside Fear Factor Live. To me, that just flat out makes no sense at all. Like, honestly, if you're watching it in a stadium like that, to me, more than anything else, it would feel like you're watching like a dance recital in an auditorium from far away. And
plus the angle's different because you're up looking down there, and there normally the dance troops are above you dancing.
Exactly. That helps with the wonderment when you're down below the action looking up on it. Last year they added in the crowd interaction where they would walk through the crowd. I mean, yeah, they could walk down the stairs and stuff, but not quite the exact same. On top of that, like if the show is what it was before, only like that 15 to 20 minutes, there's a chance that it could take longer to load in to Fear Factor Live, get in that stadium, than the actual show will even last in length. I mean, I'm sure it's not going to be that insane, but if they do expect to fill the entire stadium up, which is a big stadium, it could take longer to fill in than the actual show length is itself. But I'm sure maybe they'll try to extend the show, or maybe they have the plan that it's only going to be half filled every night. But something about it just, it feels off to me. I'm sure the show will still be amazing. Academy of Villains is a highlight. It's just, I liked being able to be right up on the fence, right in front of the stage, where you could watch it all happening so close up. You can't do that inside Fear Factor. And by having the stage outside of that Hollywood area, at least then you're like, it does take away from traffic there and it causes a bottleneck, but you build it there. It's still a good place to watch the show. And then they don't have to take Fear Factor Live down for that entire season because there's a set put there.
Yeah.
But I mean, who watches Fear Factor Live anyway? So I don't know if that's really a thought or consideration on it.
I can't imagine it's very popular still. I don't know.
No. But so, yeah, I'm sorry to go off on that, but I just wanted to make sure that I corrected it, that even though we talked about that, it will be inside Fear Factor Live.
Well, and I think I might have asked about frequent fear passes last time. If not, it wasn't during the show or whatever, because last year they took a long time to come out with those, and apparently they came out with them right after we finished recording, when we were recording. So there's like the four, the Rush of Fear, Frequent Fear, and then Fear Plus, and then the Ultimate Frequent Fear Pass that you can get. I'm going to do the Plus one, I think, because it includes Fridays.
That's what I will be doing too.
Yeah.
But okay, with that, now we will move into our questions that we have. And this first one comes, this first little ditty comes from Glenn. And
Glenn?
Yeah, that Glenn.
Glenn Sturgis?
Yeah, that Glenn. It still keeps on the Halloween Horror Nights talk. So we'll hopefully be able to help Glenn with this one. But Glenn says, I'm excited for this episode. You should be. And Glenn says, I'm thinking about visiting Universal for fall for HHN for the first time, and I'm wondering if a two-night ticket would be worth it. Based on what I've heard about the event over the years and how it's only in the studios and not IOA, it seems like we could cover most, if not the full list, of the houses and scare zones in one night. So my question is, what do you guys think? Is it a multi-night ticket better for other reasons, or simply just an option for guests who want more than one night to do it all?
Well, honestly, I think there's a couple of factors in there, too. So it depends. I know he said fall, but it depends when in the fall, because it gets very busy, where so this last year they had it past Halloween, which they did the year before, which was the first time, and that year it was empty. And then but that was right around the hurricane, I guess, too, or it was because of the hurricane or something. But then this year it was so busy that we could only do like two houses. So it depends what time you're going to go. Also, just from my perspective, from working at the Diz when we started to go and not having the frequent fear pass, I needed more than one day to absorb everything that I saw and like think back on it. Cause I remember we did a show and we were talking about it and I was like, I can't even remember half of the things I did because one, I got so scared, I forgot everything. And like two, there's just so much detail in this that I think if you're like on the fence about it, I'd say go on the other side of the fence and get the multiple nights.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. It's, with a perfect plan that includes having your tickets, but also having daytime park admission, so that way you can take advantage of the stay and scream, get in whatever will be the most popular house that get in that area for stay and scream, so you can knock that out of the way immediately. And then after that, do your best to run around and hit as many houses that are open before it opens for the general public. And then at that point, hopefully you don't have a lot left to do. Like if you can nail out 3 to 4 houses during the stay and scream period, which can be possible if you're good and you're lucky and you're able to get around to all the areas, if you can do that, you could potentially have it all done in one night, especially now that we don't have Bill and Ted to worry about, because including Bill and Ted in there, you know, you had to line up a little bit early. You wanted maybe 30 minutes early, and then once you're loaded in, you might have a 10-minute wait, then the show itself, and then getting out of there. That did eat up a lot of time. So without that this year, that changes things a little bit. But, you know, you still, even with that tactic, you need to hope for a not-so-busy night and then also a night that doesn't end at like midnight. You want to make sure that it's going to like 1 or 2 a.m. And then you could probably do it all in one night. But I'm with Rhino. It's enough. If you just want to go and say you did everything once, that's great and all. But chances are you're going to have that house that ends up blowing you away, or even multiple houses that you're going to tell yourself, oh, I want to actually stay and do this one again.
Come on,
and again,
Stranger
and again.
Things. Come on. Right away, I know you're going to want to go through that house. If you are even remotely interested in going to that house because you're a fan of the show, there is no way that you are not going to want to go through that house more than once. That house alone. Trick or Treat, I know we're going to want to go through a bunch of times, too.
Yep. I'm sure there's going to be a lot that I'm going to want to go through multiple times. I know I will, but just if I only had one night, there was probably going to be a handful that I would want to do multiple times. So you have to factor that in, too. So having the second night gives you that option of saying, okay, well, I don't have to freak out the first night. You know, I can stop and eat every now and then.
Pizza fries.
If they have them. You can take your time. You can go to the bars. You can sit inside scare zones and just actually watch it for a while instead of saying, okay, I walked through, I got my taste of that. Sometimes if you sit in there for 5, 10, 15 minutes just absorbing the atmosphere, you can end up watching some people get the pants scared off them in ways that you would just have to be lucky if you were like hoping that you saw something like that the one time you're walking through. So I personally, and Rhino agrees, it's just do the extra night. If it's an option, do it.
It's much less stressful too, on top of that.
Yeah.
So like you really do want to enjoy yourself. You don't want to be like running around like crazy. And like Craig said, like honestly, it's a lot to be able to see the shows and the houses. Yeah. Like it feels too full almost, you know?
So kind of trailing off of this, Fabian asked a question, a two-part question. I'm only going to answer the second one. And Fabian asked that we cover Halloween Horror Nights from the first day it starts. And however, we never go and cover Busch Gardens' Hallow Scream. Why don't we do that and compare the two events?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. However, I have heard, I mean, I guess I know, but I have heard that event's actually really good too. Yeah. And there's like a version of that event you can do where they'll feed you ahead of time and then let you go into the park early and stuff. My friend Alan tries to get me to go every year, and it's just, it's been a timing thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try it this year.
Yeah, that's I've been once before, and it was years ago though, like back when I was still a Universal employee. It's just one of those things. It usually comes down to the fact that for me, I live on the north side of Disney, So by the time I get down to I-4 and then travel to Tampa, I go to Tampa regularly for the breweries and other experiences around there because I love it. But getting to Busch Gardens, especially like on a weekend night, I mean, I'm looking at a solid hour and a half ride because traffic to Tampa is terrible. So honestly, that's a lot of the times why I get dissuaded from going to Tampa on the weekends, is because of that very reason. So I wish I had a better reason than that. It just is pure, I don't want to sit in the car and deal with all of that hassle. But it is something I would like to try this year, considering we have covered so many aspects of Halloween Horror Nights that it would be kind of cool to do that immediate comparison.
And we loved Not Scary Farm. I know that's in California, but it's kind of the idea that we experienced a new Halloween thing that I want.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll cover that this year, though. Mm.
Yeah, so we have to just put together our list. And you know what? If we end up just buying tickets for Howl-O-Scream and saying we're going to do it and not giving ourselves an option to get out of it,
yeah,
we're both cheap enough to say if we buy it,
yeah, I'm not gonna,
we're not passing it up. So we might just have to do that. But thank you for suggesting it and keeping it in the back of our minds. So this next one comes from Jennifer. And Jennifer says that she's in the beginning stages of planning a first Universal trip with her 13-year-old daughter over Thanksgiving break this year.
Oh, nice.
She often hears about how heavy Disney crowds are over Christmas holidays as well as Thanksgiving week, but can never really find much information about Universal crowds during Thanksgiving week. She'll only be going to the parks for 2 days and on weekdays, not weekend days, so she's still working on scheduling which of those weekdays she wants the trip to fall on. Can we give her any insight on what to expect?
It's over Thanksgiving, is that what she said?
Thanksgiving week hasn't picked the actual days.
I think that week, literally the days right before Thanksgiving, I have found in the past to be manageable. Like, it seems like you go right up to it, and then afterwards it's just a people. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, I want to say I was in and around Disney this past year because my family came down. I don't think we went to Universal Thanksgiving. No, we did go over to Universal because they went to see the nighttime lights at Hogwarts Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely slammed. I want to say that would have been the night before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I could be wrong on those dates, but that was also for a very specific thing. That was to go see the nighttime lights, and we watched the parade, and we didn't have to stake out too long for that. And I want to say I remember they went in on like ET or something and got on pretty quickly. So I would say like the night before Thanksgiving, expect moderate level crowds, not heavy, but definitely moderate. Thanksgiving Day, honestly, I feel like it's a crapshoot. I've seen days that are slammed at Universal on Thanksgiving, and I've worked days there, back when I worked there, that Thanksgiving was just completely dead.
Mm.
And it was just ironic that, you know, we're all called into work this holiday that's supposed to be crazy, and
it's not.
Then it's just absolutely not. So I really think it is just based also around what's happening that year. Is there something new that it's attracting people to Central Florida? What's going on? So I that day, I can't really give you a lot of insight on it, just based on my past experiences, is that it really is hit or miss. So you could get lucky, you might not. Black Friday is always bad into that weekend. It's just going to be bad. So not that you would have to worry about it. So I would say potentially, like, if that you're talking that whole week of Thanksgiving, like you get in on Sunday or Monday and you're there through Black Friday and all that, I would say probably looking at like that Tuesday, Wednesday might be decent days. But again, that could all go out the window, but those are probably the ones I would feel most comfortable with. Mondays, again, just like at Walt Disney World, everyone always says, well, Magic Kingdom's always going to be busy on a Monday. I've found in the past from times that I've been to Universal that Mondays have been crazy too, but you never know. It could always change, but I would say that Tuesday, Wednesday. That would be my advice. And moving on, this next one comes from Sean. And Sean says, we've booked a week at Portofino Bay, arriving Sunday, January 27th, which Sean believes is the same week as a celebration of Harry Potter for 2019, if they announce it and when they announce it. They are Potter fans, just not huge fans, and want to avoid crazy crowds. But is there anything that we would consider a must or do to see for this event?
I don't know anymore, because we've been doing it for so long that it's... I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't even switch to you with them.
You didn't, so I was. That's why I stopped talking. I was like, no, I don't. I mean, I enjoy, like, obviously, probably, I guess the big highlight would be the panel with the actors, whoever they may get, assuming that they get some names that you care about. And then I thought the Harry Potter Live, the music thing was cool. The kickoff, like, you know, the thing they do on the music stage. But
yeah, and that probably won't even come back this next year, if we have it this next year.
You don't think so?
Well, I mean, they change the entertainment for the opening night celebration every year.
That's
so
true.
It's never the same thing twice. I would agree with you on, if there is a celebrity panel happening, attend that.
Yeah.
If you're not a huge Potter fan, but you're just like, okay, I want to do something involved with it, I would absolutely say that. Try to get into one of those, because at the end of the day, they're celebrities talking about their experiences on the movie. So it's, you don't get to do that all the time. And then the only other thing I would say is, don't waste your time waiting in lines at the expo and such.
Yeah.
Don't bother with that. Just walk around the park and see people dressed up. And while you're doing everything else you want to do as part of your vacation, just take that in and be like, oh, it's cool that I also get to see all these cosplayers.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. It's like for us, like our MegaCon, like I don't have to do panels for that. I just like seeing the people in the costumes. So you'll see like a ton of Harry Potter themed stuff. Yeah. Like, I feel like that'll be enough for you. That's why it's great, because this event is free with your ticket.
Yeah. Sean does have a follow-up question too, and we're not going to go fully into it, but Sean said, what would your perfect week at Universal look like for first-timers? It must include at least 2 days of downtime based on, you know, people going to Disney and being tired when they come back. So just, I think we should answer this question on, like, based on, like, okay, Universal Studios a day, Islands of Adventure a day, maybe 2 days, like that. But then factor in. So 7 days, you have to fill those slots. 2 days are downtime. So 5 days.
Water park.
What do you do?
Oh, well, I do a park a day, but you have the hopper, so you can cross over if you want or whatever. And you do Volcano Bay for the third day. Then you got your two rest days in there, I guess, if you want, although I consider the water park to be a rest day, but whatever. And then I'd say 3 days at those parks, 1 day at the water park. That's 4. The 2 rest days, 6, and then 7 go off property if you want it somewhere.
See, I didn't even think about that in there. With my mind on that, I would do probably, you get there, you want to do the parks right away. So a park day, and then I would say Volcano Bay, and then I would say another park day, and then after that, I would say take a day of rest.
Yeah.
And then I would say hit it hard with Volcano Bay.
Two Volcano Bay days, huh?
Two Volcano Bay days.
Okay.
Do another park day.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, sorry, Volcano Bay. Then do your another day of rest. Just relax.
Yeah.
And then finish off on a heavy park day where you get to do everything else in there. But I would do a lot of resting in the middle. That's just how I would do it.
Second Cabana Bay at the end, because I feel like you leave on that beach like note. I don't know, but then you're. I get where you're going though with the theme park and the. You can want to leave on that high, you know.
That's how it would be for me, because I know my last day, anytime I'm at like Disneyland,
I'm running around
beat to beat. I would do the same thing if I was coming here and I had that last day, but I would put those days of rest in the middle, just because it's, you know, just because it's a rest day. I mean, we're still talking about going and hanging out at City Walk, exploring the different hotels, maybe even going offsite like that. But
Yeah. Wow.
Thank you.
Okay.
I couldn't cover it.
I don't know. I was done talking.
Yeah, you were like, wow. Owen Wilson.
Good job.
Yeah. Okay, our next one comes from Liz. And Liz says, where Walt Disney World is geared towards kids of all ages, there's stroller parking in numerous places throughout the parks. Universal attracts a more adult crowd. Are there still several locations in each park for stroller parking?
Yeah, of course there are. It trends older, but not like older. I feel like, look at Seuss Landing.
Yeah.
You know, like there's plenty of a kid area. There's the cartoon area that I cannot remember the name of, Toon Lagoon right now. Yeah. And like the Woody Woodpecker's Kid Zone and stuff like that. But I will say I don't see as many strollers at Universal. However, there are definitely strollers at Universal and definitely places to park them, but it's not the epidemic that it is at Walt Disney World.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Where you see at Walt Disney World, like I think about the area right outside of the carousel.
Yep, that's literally what was in my mind right now, too.
Yeah, which is just usually about 200 strollers all parked in the same compact area jutting
and
out
like
into
an
the
area
street.
Where you're like, I need to walk through that area. Who was like, this is where the strollers should go? Like, come on, somebody's gonna break a leg someday.
But, I mean, it's also a mess right outside of that Jungle Cruise area because I think they park it from Jungle Cruise as well as then like the magic carpet.
Yeah, the carpet rides too. That's so a messy area.
That's all messy
and pirates
in there.
It's like that whole trifecta.
Yeah, and so I think about those areas and the first thing you have to realize at Universal is that it's not like that.
No.
Stroller parking areas are much smaller.
I can't even think of an area like those at Universal.
There isn't. There aren't any areas where it's like
a cluster.
This is meant for 300 strollers in this one area. Like the one outside of Forbidden Journey that would get used. I mean, we would have overflow all the time because it was probably built for maybe like 15 strollers. That's probably being too generous for that. I would say like 10.
Yeah.
Most people just went and ended up, and that had to share it with ECVs as well. Mm. So ECVs and strollers in this area, we would overflow. People would park random places all around. But that's kind of telling of how little strollers come through. It's not like you can't bring them there. It's just, it's much more contained. Mm-hmm. So yes, you will find plenty of stroller parking areas, but to help on the stress, it's not like you have to really search high and far for your stroller in a mess of all the other ones. So do not be dissuaded from coming away. Universal does have, at the end of the day with kids, we just went there with our friend Mary, and she's there with her kids. At the end of the day, even when there's attractions they can't do, there's plenty of playgrounds in other areas that sometimes kids just want to go and run around on.
Yeah.
So there's always something out there. Our next question is going to come from Kelsey. And Kelsey says, I love Disney World. One of the reasons is that it reminds me of my childhood, and I can ride some of the attractions that I could as a child. It hurts my feelings that I can't say the same about Universal. I know I probably read it incorrectly.
No, you just called her Mary, I just realized, too.
Oh, yeah, no.
Okay. Sorry, I was confused. Yeah, no. Okay.
No, I do that. It helps throw her off the trail. So, Kelsey says, question, how do you feel about there being almost no original attractions / rides left at Universal Studios?
I don't care. I don't even mean that in a mean way. Like, there are some I get bummed out about, you know? Like, it's not like Disney where it has the same type of a history of creation with it. It's more of is the property relevant and is the attraction beloved? And, you know, Universal had a weird kind of start to it. And I do miss Back to the Future quite a bit. And I do love Springfield. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that ride though makes me sick, but, that's probably the only one where I was really like, even the Ghostbuster show, I was like, man, I wish they had something like that still. But then I watch it and I'm like, this was definitely dated. But like Back to the Future, I would have loved that stick around still. But it lives in the same way that I guess Disneyland has to live. It only has so much space until recently, but it has to keep things fresh. So I actually feel like it drives them to kind of make sure that stuff stays up to par these days. You know,
yeah, I think the ultimate thing that kind of what you hinted on there is, this is not a knock on Universal for saying this, but I feel like Disney, in some instances, they were smart about how they designed their rides, because they designed some of them to be genuinely timeless. Mm-hmm. Things like Jungle Cruise and a lot of the dark rides.
Like Pirates or Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
You know, those, they're like things that, they're stories and adventures, and the way they're told, that it's like what you said, they're going to be timeless. Yeah. You're always going to hear stories about pirates and ghosts.
And I believe that Universal has created attractions also in that same realm that are timeless. I think E.T. is acid trippy as it is, is timeless. I thought that Jaws was timeless. However, in the case of, and that's one that I will say that, you know, I didn't have those Universal rides from my childhood because I didn't go. I didn't go until I was an adult and working there. And so I don't have the memories of Back to the Future, Ring Kong, and original Earthquake Before Disaster. I don't have any of that. All I have is E.T. and Jaws horror makeup show. Those were the only three, I think, when I started going that were opening day. And
you didn't even have Back to the Future?
Nope.
Oh, no. You never got to do Back to the Future?
Nope, only on the DVD.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I didn't know that. Sorry, that was the first ride that I really liked. My brother and I was like, I can do this, and because I loved it so much. I mean, I've already told the story on the show before.
See, the thing, though, is I watched the DVD of it, and I would argue that based on watching that, there is no way that it still was relevant.
Okay, well, here's what I'm going to say. The argument I'm going to make is that the thing that annoys me, I guess, most with that is that the attraction that replaced it is the exact attraction. Yeah. So it's still the car that goes up and takes you through the adventure in the dome. And I do love The Simpsons. I think with the other ones like Jaws, which I did also really, it does, there's a sad part that there's no Jaws, but it's also like they weren't made with the same types of technology that Disney was using in the storytelling capacity that Disney was using. So like, I feel like those sort of attractions with their technology became dated. Like you said, you know, you're saying timeless. I felt like Back to the Future was something that could have been upgraded and done with. So that's the only one where I'm like, this is the one where I'm like, I feel like it prematurely left.
I'm not doing it, again, only basing it on watching the video of the actual attraction.
It is hard when you're watching that DVD video of it, because the DVD video, you're like, well, this is weird.
They can update the projection on it. They can make it 4K, all that, but they wouldn't be able to change the look of Back to the Future, because Back to the Future was very
80s. True, true, true.
That's part of why, as much as I miss the original video for Star Tours with Rex piloting and having the Death Star run and going through the comet, as much as I miss all that, because that to me will always be the ultimate Star Tours, I think about it in that same sense of like, it was starting to look a little old there at the end and feel really old. And now comparing that to like with the ultimate one that you can get, which is Jakku, followed by then doing Crate, where Rian Johnson literally designed going through the actual inside of that based on Star Tours. So it came full circle. Yeah, all the red crystals inside Crate, he designed that as a nod to Star Tours flying through the comet.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it came full circle. And then having it end in Batuu, like, I felt like that embodies a lot of what the original Star Tours did. And so that's finally like the first one where I'm like, this was worth it to upgrade. But with Back to the Future, I love Simpsons. I love the Simpsons ride. Yeah, I think it's so much fun.
I think it's
funny. It
doesn't
make me sick.
The thing is, it's hard because I do like the actual ride, like the movie you're watching. I think it's hilarious. I think there's so many jokes in it. And I think if you can stomach it, it's repeatable. It's just a disconnect between a cartoon and what was real, I guess.
Yeah. But I just finishing my thought of it, I think that is still, as much as they've done such a great job with the area, they are going to have to look at that very soon.
I agree with you about the attraction,
And it's, so I think that's even going to be on. They're going to add a question mark onto that in the future, because now that, you know, once we see what happens with Woody Woodpecker's Kid Zone, you are running out of things that are old and dated. So kind of circling back with the question, the only one that I'm really sad about still is Jaws, because I did feel like that was timeless. I felt like that could have stayed. That being said, Diagon Alley is a much better use of that space.
I think that's part of it. What occupied it afterwards, and maybe that's where my emotion is actually running to, because I, you know, you do bring up Jaws, and the more I'm sitting here thinking about it, the more I'm thinking like that. Even if you don't like the movie, if you don't watch whatever, it's still a ride where you're in a boat and a shark is attacking you, and it was exciting and thrilling, and you know, the technology could have been updated and stuff, but what we got in place of was so much. Yeah. More.
And as much as some people would argue against it, so far as Universal has gone through their slashing phase that they're in right now, for the most part, I would say they've only made positive changes and impacts. Looking back at Transformers, adding Transformers into the space that wasn't really utilized, I mean, throughout the years with Murder, She Wrote and Xena and all that, I mean, that was...
I forgot there was even anything in there. When that attraction showed up, I was just like, what was here before? You know, exactly. And I think that's a good testament. Yeah.
I don't think I ever did anything that was in there before it was Transformers. So that was a great upgrade. Even going back before that time, using Mummy in place of Kong, while Kong, I feel like, is a better IP... In the long run, Mummy is a great coaster. Mm-hmm. It is so much fun. We just did it again the other day, and I know we basically do it every single time we go in the park.
Oh, yeah, it's an every time.
It's just so much fun. It is a well-rounded attraction. So that was a better use of space. You know, Twister was dumb fun, and as much as I hate Jimmy Fallon, I think overall...
The building that's there... The structure there is utilizing its space much better.
Thank you. Yeah. That's the attraction isn't necessary. If I had my choice between would I rather stand and watch Twister or sit and watch Fallon's ride, I would rather stand and watch Twister, but Fallon became more than that because of the use of the whole pre-show area and the entertainment. And so I would argue that that is an upgrade. Despicable Me upgrading from Hanna-Barbera was a big upgrade.
But Blue Man Group from Nickelodeon.
Downgrade. Not so much.
Downgrade.
And we still don't have the exact knowledge of what is going into Terminator 2. But whatever it is, I have to assume is going to be an upgrade, because that show, at the end of its life, was looking just pretty awful. And, you know, I know there are Beetlejuice purist fans out there and Earthquake fans who would rather have that back. And you know what? I enjoy Fast and Furious. Honestly, I also look at it from a way that I can understand why people would want those two things back. I think Fast and Furious is a better use of the space for right now, but I also think that by adding Fast and the Furious in now, when that does get out of date and relevant, I feel like Universal's going to be able to pull it faster than if they would have left Earthquake in that space even longer and build up that nostalgia even more for it. But that's just my opinion on it. So, you know, again, arguably speaking, most of the changes that they have made have been for the better. So it sucks that there's not all these original things, but you know what? Universal has been brave in proving the theory that these places aren't museums and they need to change and adapt with the times. Mm-hmm. And I, just because it's something, you know,
it also lets you know, you got to get out there and do it, because you're not guaranteed. It's not always going to be there every time you're there.
The biggest test, I think, will be seeing what happens with Hollywood Studios and Epcot after their reimagining phases have finished. Because if we walk on the other side of those saying, holy crap, they did such a great job with all of this, then Disney has just proven that they can curb the nostalgia and leave behind things of the past in order for the future. And I mean, that's eventually that will translate into the Magic Kingdom. And and other, and I mean, Disneyland already happened.
How about that?
With that, we'll but see. No, I eventually they if it is a success with those two parks, what's clearly people want to stay up with the time, and there's only so many. There are some instances where things should stay because they are timeless. Again, so like we've said, but you know, it's the right model. Going towards the future is the right model. Just give me an idea
for a best and worst show.
Very good. I'm glad I could help with that. But that was actually our last question. I can't believe our last question took up like 20 minutes of the discussion. I'm not quite sure if it was that long, but we have a couple. Like I said, we have a couple more we could probably throw in. But I think that was a good place to end on. It was nice and introspective and pretty fun. So thank you, Rhino, for answering those questions with me.
Yeah. They were good questions.
Yeah,
good questions, everyone. Good work, guys.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And I shouldn't be just thanking Rhino. I should be thanking you, all of you out there, for sending in your questions. We did appreciate it because it helped us get this episode out there. So thank you so much for it. And again, thank you so much to everyone out there who watched and listened to this. We do appreciate it. If you need any more links or information, head over to disunplugged.com. That's the home of our show notes page for this show and all the others on the Disunplugged Podcast Network. There'll also be links to our email there, uopodcast@disunplugged.com, as well as links to our social media channels on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're watching this on YouTube, of course, make sure you hit that thumbs up button if you enjoyed it and you leave comments down below, especially in regards to that last question. I want to hear what a lot of people have to say about that. So please do so. And yeah, make sure you're subscribed. Please. Thank you. And if you're listening to this on iTunes, of course, always rate and review and subscribe us. Subscribe to us there. Missed a word. I think I'm missing a lot of words now, but hey, my day's almost over, so I'm allowed to. But yes, again, thank you to everyone out there who listened and watched this. We do appreciate it. Thank you again to Rhino, and we will see you again next week with the next episode of the Dis Unplugged Universal Edition. But until then, remember, no resolutions.